You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi, and I host this business talk show, which airs live on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. on the West Coast. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast time, heard exclusively on www.octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. We do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives from around the country who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of Critical Mass for Business with Executive Forums business owners in select markets across the United States. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping members take their business to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience, and it's available for sale on Amazon.com. Simply type in my name, Richard Franzi, and you'll find the book. If you would like to learn more about CEO peer groups, I would suggest you check out our website, www.executiveforums.com. Say, if you're one of those lucky individuals who are listening to us live today, then on the octalkradio.net's website, find the community chat room, log in with your Twitter ID, post your thoughts and questions. Paul, our capable producer, will be checking them, bringing some of them to my attention, and possibly we'll work them into one of the two interviews that we have scheduled for you today. Let's turn our attention to our first guest. Our first guest is with First Contact HR. He's Leon Singletary, and he's the president, and we're going to have a ranging conversation about many topics related to HR and security screenings and other topics. But first, let me welcome Leon to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. To the show, Leon.
Well, thank you, Rick, for this opportunity. It's a pleasure to be on the air.
Great. Well, we're going to spend about 25 minutes with here today on Coast to Coast. I've got a handful of questions that I would like to get your insight and advice. As you know, Critical Mass Coast to Coast is really designed to help business executives learn from their peers. And as president of your firm, you are in a great position to help to explain to us not only a bit about your business and you running it, but also we have the great opportunity, given what your firm does for your clients, to kind of talk about, for other business owners, your area of expertise. So let's start, Leon, by having you talk a little bit about your firm and explaining the services that you provide.
Sure. Our firm is First Contact HR. We are a national provider of employment background checks, drug testing, HR consulting. We were founded in 2004. We're based in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. And we essentially support employers with vetting talent to make sure that they are hiring the best talent possible. And we also help employers to mitigate risk by making sure that they're not bringing on individuals into the organizations that wouldn't meet their cultural requirements.
All right, I'm gonna rewind the tape, and I'm gonna ask you to go a little deeper on that last thought in background screening, drug testing, some of the services that I know your firm provides. But what you know, I find many times for mid-market CEOs, business owners, it's what they don't know that many times can create problems for them in their business. And I guess as I think about maybe the services that you provide for your clients, you're helping to get at what they don't know in hiring people. But could you go a little bit deeper on how these services help your clients ensure they get the kind of people that they're looking for to fit their company?
Sure. Well, you know, the newspaper headlines today are full of stories that talk about individuals that basically represent themselves as having, you know, certain backgrounds, certain experiences, certain educational requirements. And the marketplace with, thank God, unemployment is starting to decline, but, you know, it is still high. And because of the economic situation, a lot of candidates, tend to exaggerate on the resume with their credentials. So what we do is to support employers is to help vet applicants during the hiring process. One of the ways we do this is to take the Social Security number that they provide, and we run it through the credit bureau and do what's called a identity verification. We make sure that the individual's name and address and past employers and residences really match what was provided during the interview process. We also contact previous employers and verify the dates of employment, whether or not the person is rehirable, whether or not there were any, you know, unusual circumstances around the person's past employment. And we also verify the education credentials. It's very important to do that because, again, you know, it's very embarrassing for organizations to elevate someone to, you know, a certain level in organizations only to find that the basic information that was provided during the interview process was incorrect or inaccurate.
I am have to imagine that you might have some interesting stories about what people said and what actually were the facts, Leon. I also imagine that most of that might be confidential and you can't share it with us on the radio show, but I will open the door a crack and say, is there any interesting story that could make your point about what people put on the resume that you have found after the fact not to be true that you could share with us today?
Yeah, I can probably at least think of a couple examples. One that was more recent that resonates for me was working with a client where, you know, we literally conducted an employment. No, actually, it was an education verification. And the person had stated that they had graduated from a well-known local institution. And the verification came back that it was incorrect, that the person did not graduate from this institution. So that went into our report, went back to our client, who actually was a pharmaceutical organization, and this was a very important piece of information to verify based on the person's work in the organization. We were surprised, and the client was surprised, that after the client confronted the individual, they actually produced a transcript. And they were adamant that they had attended this institution. So that transcript was provided to us, and we went back to the institution. And the institution, literally had to get researchers who, in some cases, were no longer with the school to really look at this document. And to make a long story short, they indicated that the seal was in the wrong place. They didn't provide a Social Security number at the time, and some other facts about why the transcript that was produced was false. And so, again, that was presented back to our client, who, ultimately made the decision to withdraw the job offer to pass on this this applicant. And I mention this story because it became clear to us that this particular applicant had probably been challenged in the past, produced the transcript, and the employer just accepted that, and the person was employed. And so it just really demonstrated, you know, how important the vetting process is and to do it the right way. You'll be surprised how many employers will, you know, take the candidate's word or just take the documents that are provided. And what has proliferated across the country, particularly here in the United States, is what's called diploma mills. And the technology with color processing is so advanced today that one can easily kind of create something that looks very accurate in terms of a diploma or certificate. And, you know, employers that are not sophisticated might accept that as being the verification for one's academic credentials. And as you can tell from the example I just gave, that's not necessarily the most appropriate way to verify one's educational background.
Leon, I've got to ask, there's so many national and databases that are people are using to record and log different, people for different reasons. Are you aware of any movement or way that people are, and is it even proper to ask? I don't know, but collecting names of people who have been known to put false information like this on an official document like a resume, and is there any national database for people who are lying on their resumes? Or any way that, or is this really a case-by-case kind of activity that requires the kind of work that, you know, an investigation that you had to do for this case?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, that's kind of the first time I've heard that question, and the short answer is no. I think that, if a person, quite frankly, tries to kind of falsify their background and is caught, that information is not captured on any national database. It's actually, something the employer is aware of and the person moves on. That's actually the reason why it's very important for employers to conduct background checks, whether they do it internally or use a third-party resource like our organization, First Contact HR. In fact, when we meet with prospective employers, one of the lines that, we tend to talk about basically goes like this. If you're not doing background checks, you're like the only house in the neighborhood without an alarm system. Where do you think the candidates that have something to hide, where do you think they're going to go? They're going to go to the employer that basically is not, properly vetting. And so so if an individual, applies for a position, the background check comes back that, in fact, they were terminated from their last employer because of, inappropriate behavior, but they didn't express that in the interview, and they weren't, open and honest, and then it comes out later through a background check, then, the person, basically is, has to, either come to grips with that and move on. The employer is not necessarily obligated to then take that information and communicate it to another source. Hopefully I answered your question.
You did, and having been in a position as a hiring manager and having an HR department, and also having had former employees who, future potential employees would contact us, we had to be very careful about what information we gave about that employee. I know there's, it's very sensitive, the type of information that a former employee can really give about a past employee as well. Is that not true?
I think the most state laws are starting to change on that particular issue. In fact, for a long period of time, it's been the practice of most employers not to provide, detailed information about a former employee or ex-employee. The employer would just provide, the title, the dates of employment, and just some basic information. We're located in the state of Pennsylvania, so most employers here are you know, protected under the law to provide information beyond the basic information as long as it's true. The information has to be true that's provided. So if, you know, a person, you know, basically left an organization due to poor performance, and that's, you know, well documented, then that's the reason why they left. If that same person is not rehireable with that particular employer, and that's on record at that place of employment, then it would be okay to reveal that information. As long as the information is true and, you know, employers are not, taking the liberty of, you know, kind of talking, you know, off the cuff and providing information that could be viewed as disparaging or, would hurt that person's chances of ever being employed and not documented in any form or fashion, that would be essentially wrong and not something that an employer should engage in. And in fact, most HR departments would caution managers from providing information that, bordered on opinion. But I would say that, it is important, though, that if a former employee, an employer was looking to get information from the past employer and there was a situation of theft, violence, something of that nature that potentially could hurt the future employer, that information should come out one way or another. In other words, the past employer should be open and honest and not allow the future employer to get hurt by that particular employee.
Yeah, we some of the larger firms that I had worked for in my career actually had policies where the only people that could respond to these types of requests from outside the company was the active hiring manager or the previous manager were discouraged from engaging in any conversations with anyone about a previous employer, just because it's a very uncomfortable, and I think you're right, they, you know, people tend to go too far maybe in some higher, you know, if they're not professionals in this way, like HR departments are. So I would think a service, bringing it full circle then, Leon, I would think a service like yours that is trained, professional, know how to contact the know the right questions to ask, know how to kind of hear between the lines, if you will, if that's a phrase I can use, to kind of piece this together is probably very valuable, especially, like you said, here during a very tight labor market.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you a question, then we're going to take a sponsorship break. But before I do that, I want to ask you this question. Of all the things that you've learned in your business career and in the First Contact HR, do you have a guiding principle that you use to lead and grow your firm?
Sure, absolutely. We have a number of kind of values, that really starts with client focus, which, you know, we believe is the core of our business, and it's really a differentiator for us. And that essentially means that when a client contacts us, we essentially respond. We respond the same day. And we basically want to leave each client with wanting to do business with us in the future. And so that's really important. The other thing about what we do, it's important to have integrity. It's important that we're perceived as a organization, not just from the top, but, every staff member that, we're basically, providing information that is useful, that is accurate, that is timely, and so integrity is very, very important. And the other is accountability. And for us, that simply means, doing what we say. So, if we, basically commit to something, we follow through on our commitments.
How do you make sure that the people within your organization understand the points that you just made?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. There are a couple ways we do this. First and foremost, we conduct at least every 6 months a client survey. We basically ask our clients how we're doing. And so, you know, we keep a 95% client satisfaction rating. It's something that, you know, we pride ourselves with, and so we've been pretty fortunate over the years to receive high ratings from our clients, and we share that with our staff members. The other thing is that from the vantage point of accountability, from the vantage point of the integrity, internally, you know, we conduct background checks, obviously, and we release reports to our clients. But those reports, from a quality control perspective, from a integrity accountability perspective, are only released to our clients after at least two points of contact review that report. So we make sure that from a quality control perspective internally that, you know, everyone knows that, you know, internally a certain standard has to be met, and that allows us to not only look at the quality, but look at the timing of how long it took to complete that report.
Okay. I've got one more question for you here today, Leon, on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. And hopefully people are listening live to the show. If not, maybe they're listening to us as a podcast, maybe off of Apple iTunes. I don't know. But that's one of the beauties of internet radio, is it lives on past the moment when you're on the air live. Talk to us about how you see growth, where you see growth coming from in the future for your firm, and a little bit about, from your perspective, what could be the impact of that growth on First Contact HR?
Okay, great. You know, right now, across the economy, we've been working with organizations in the medical and education fields. We call them EDS and MEDS. And we've, you know, basically seen growth in these areas. We started this business, however, looking at targeting the small to medium-sized employer. That was a and continues to be an unmet need from a background screening perspective. Having come from a Fortune 50 organization, I've spent 16 years with Bristol-Myers Squibb. I was, you know, surprised in the early 2000s to find and discover that most small to medium-sized employers didn't conduct background checks. And so in response to your question, where we see growth, we continue to see it in the small to medium-sized employer space. We think that, you know, that's the future of this economy. We clearly see, you know, boomers, you know, starting their own businesses. We see efforts towards, you know, protecting the environment and, you know, going green and, you know, further research that, you know, basically the businesses of tomorrow are not here yet. And we stand ready to support those organizations as they basically look to hire and grow their businesses.
Yeah, I think I'm interested by what you said, Leon, because I choose to believe long term, with perspective, people will be writing about the Great Recession, that one of the benefits or good things that came out for the economy of the recession, mm-hmm. is this entrepreneurial surge from baby boomers and, frankly, others who, for whatever variety of reasons, decided their best choice earnings is to go into business for themselves. And so that drives a lot of future new business hiring and growth, because it's that part of the market, the small and mid-market companies, that tend to create the new jobs as the recovery happens.
Yes.
If someone would like to learn more about your firm, how do they find you? What's your website?
Our website is www.firstcontacthr. We also have a internet recruiting site that's called mypartimepro.com. It's essentially very unique, perhaps the only one in the country that looks to match professionals with employers looking to hire flexible part-time individuals.
And there's so many more people who are choosing to do that as a career, not just a holding position till they find another regular full-time position, who are actually choosing that as a lifestyle.
Absolutely.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you being on Critical Mass Coast to Coast, Leon. Thank you for taking the time to be our guest today, and I want to welcome you to the Critical Mass and the Executive Forums business community.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You do the same.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Leon Singletary, ladies and gentlemen, president of First Contact HR. And he was our first of two guests that we're going to have on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Our second guest comes to us from Apple Tree Answers, and his name is John Ratliff. He is the president. He will be with us, but first we're going to take a break and hear a message from our sponsor, and then we'll be back with John.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
Welcome back to this installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. Always an exciting place to be when you're doing live radio, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're only listening to this as a podcast in the future, boy, you ought to listen to us live because there's a lot of exciting things going on. You know, we're going to have John Ratliff, who is the president of Apple Tree Answers, here on the second part of Critical Mass, Coast to Coast. Apple Tree Answers was recognized in 2010 by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies. And I'm going to want to ask him about that because Inc. magazine ranked AppleTree number 2,228 on its fourth annual Inc. 5,000 list. And that's, you know, an exclusive ranking of the nation's fastest growing private companies. And that's quite a distinction to be able to achieve that recognition by Inc. magazine. It certainly is a badge of honor in these challenging economic times to be able to have that level of growth. Companies that tend to make the Inc. 5,000 list are growing faster than the average bear. And so when John joins us here on Critical Mass, the radio show, I'm going to ask him about that. So let's turn our attention now to our second guest. Again, his name is John Ratliff. And John, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Hi, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's get right into it. Tell us more about this company that has been so successful that you've made the Inc. 5000 list in 2010. Tell us about what it is that your firm does.
So essentially what we do is we'll provide kind of the real human being side of customer service for companies. So we have about 575 employees. About 475 of those employees are what we call experts. They're frontline, on the phones, on email, responding to faxes, those types of things. And they are kind of real live human beings that are providing customer service for companies when they're not available to do it themselves.
So,
we feel like, we feel like now it's amazing. This wasn't the case 10, 20, and certainly 30 years ago, but it's now a competitive advantage to have a real person answer your phone or answer an email as opposed to an automated attendant or an auto response email. And we're actually able to give companies that competitive advantage by providing those people when they can't do it themselves. For some of our customers, that's 24/7, 365. For some of them, it's after hours. And for some, it's actually when their people are tied up and they're in an overflow situation instead of a voicemail or answering machine type setup, it can actually still go to a live person. And our goal is that the caller never knows that they got a third party. They think they've reached the company. We've taken a lot of pains in advance to make sure that that we mirror the company's business process and create a great experience for the caller, and the company can still provide that great level of service without having the people in place to do it themselves.
So tell me, John, who's an ideal client, or what's a typical client?
Is a small business that that still believes in real high-touch customer care, customer service. They want to make sure that their customers, through their interactions, are having great experiences, whether, again, it's email or telephone call, or we still do actually some fax work. But it's primarily telephone calls. So, you know, we have mechanical contracting companies are a great example. So the plumbers, the heaters, the electricians, all the residential and commercial mechanical contracting type services. They have customers that need help a lot of times around the clock, and certainly they can't pay to have a receptionist or people to answer the phone after hours and on weekends, and for the smaller guys, even in some cases during the day. Yet they want the competitive advantage of a real person regardless of when their customer calls. So we've talked to them in advance, and we know what's important and what's not. We know the questions to ask and how to schedule their guys, and we can even quote prices and those types of things. And so if you're you're a plumber, you have advertising, and a residential home calls you at 9 o'clock at night, that call might route to AppleTree. We get all the pertinent information, and we can actually dispatch the plumber right from our system. And they could literally be having their stuff worked on before a lot of other plumbers would even get the message the next morning. So, for a lot of these mechanical contracting companies, they charge, overtime rates after hours. And to get those calls, it's certainly worthwhile. It's worthwhile for their guys. It's worthwhile for the principals. So they'll use us. Property management is another great example. So residential property management, they have legal responsibilities to respond to lots of different types of emergencies after hours. Instead of having to staff someone around the clock to answer the phone, we can take all those calls, we can screen out the emergencies from the non-emergencies, and then we can actually dispatch their service techs right out to the residents, apartments or townhomes to take care of problems before they become, major problems the next morning. So that's kind of our typical customer, but we have about 10,000 total customers, and they span, dozens and dozens of industries. But that kind of gives you a snapshot into what our typical customer looks like.
I want to ask you a question about being listed on the Inc. 500, the Inc. 5000 fastest growing companies. I know that for your firm, it's not the first time that your firm has achieved that level of distinction. But what does that mean for you as the leader and president of your firm, and then for your people when you kind of get notified by the magazine that you've made the list and you've placed so highly on that list?
Yeah, so we were an Inc. 500 company in 2004, 5, and 6, and then we've been Inc. 5000, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So we kind of have a seven-year history of making Inc.'s list. And I think more than anything, it probably gives us credibility in a in a prospect situation. If it comes down to us and another company, there's certainly some benefit of being on that list a sustained number of times. I think during the 30-year history of the list, there's been about, with the 5,000 and the 500, about 28,000 different companies that have made the list, and there's only about 30 that have been on seven times. So, I mean, that's a good story for us to tell to a prospective customer for us. And I think for our people, it's something to celebrate. They get really excited about it. It's a great company story. But the Inc. list really focuses on revenue as the growth metric, and it's a percentage change in revenue over a period of time. And it's not really how we measure our success, but it is a nice perk to kind of have that in our back pocket.
Well, and to do it seven successive years is really challenging, because those of us that are familiar with it, or even after you've done such a great job of explaining kind of the metric that they use, you can envision in the listening audience, every year you have great percentage year-over-year growth. The next year it's hard to have great percentage year-over-year growth because the numbers keep getting larger and larger, and so that percentage, it's a challenge to continue to be on the list and make the list, but to be able to do for such a sustained period.
That is absolutely true. 20% of 30 million is a lot different than 20% of a million. So it does get a lot more challenging. We've managed to sustain, we've had better than 30% growth in 15 of our 16 years. The only year we did not experience 30%, we were about, 10 or 11% growth in 2009. And obviously that was a tough economic time, and it was also a year that we didn't do, we had no acquisitions that year. So those two things combined to slow our growth down a little bit. But other than that kind of one outlier, we've been 30% plus. So yeah, it is getting harder to maintain the 30% level for sure.
So let me ask you, kind of a personal professional question, which is, of all the things you've learned in business, have you settled on a guiding principle, John, that you use to lead AppleTree Answers? And if you could, if you do have a guiding principle, would you share it with us?
Yeah, no question about it. And, it's become, so AppleTree is about 16 years old. We had our 16th birthday in March. And it's become extremely evident in the last probably 3 to 5 years how important it is to focus on culture. We're in a very intensive frontline employee hourly type role. Traditionally, our industry has pretty extreme turnover, 75 to 150% in different segments of our industry are the averages. So about 4 years ago, we really got serious about driving those numbers down. And we started with a real hard look at culture and people and what kind of experience are we creating for our staff. And we actively, every single day, talk about, we have seven core values. We talk about our core values and our culture at all levels of the organization every single day. And we've managed to take our voluntary turnover down to about 17%. So we're beating our industry averages by, 3, 4, 5 times. But more important than that, we just have a group of people that are really engaged around kind of fulfilling the vision of the company and what we do. And all the other stuff just sort of takes care of itself. Focusing on profit, focusing on revenue, focusing on a lot of these kind of numeric metrics is important and necessary and everything else. But without a great culture, I think you just spin your wheels. And it's become, it probably took us 12 years to get okay at it, 2 more years to get good at it, and now I think we're finally world-class at it. and it's changed the company forever.
Well, with our clients here on the West Coast, I'm in Southern California, broadcasting from sunny Southern California. My business partner and I, when we talk to our clients about culture, you know, our point to them is, work on culture or not, your company has a culture. Everyone does. It's incumbent on you, though, as the president, CEO, founder, whatever the title might be, the leader of the company, to really make sure you understand what your company's culture is, and if it's not where you'd like it to be, to take steps to move it to the place where you believe it should be.
Yeah, I could not agree with that statement more, that every company has a culture, whether you've thought about it in advance and defined it and helped to create it or not, it exists. And if you're exactly right, if it's not where you want it to be, nobody in the organization can fix it until the CEO is totally bought into how important it is. And,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's countless examples of when the perspective of the president, the founder, the CEO, the leader of the company permeates the organization, and a change at that level, either because that person's changed or because that person has a philosophical change, can have a dramatic impact on the company.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you'll see a lot of companies where I think people, even at the senior leadership level, will try and champion initiatives, and without the CEO buy-in, they die. We're very active in kind of small business learning, small business process. We attend tons of events every year with really a lot of our management team about, you know, how to run your company better and how to get better at lots of different things. And you know, one of the coaches we use brings together about 400 or 500 companies twice a year, and there's a lot of CEOs in attendance. And it is abundantly clear almost instantly, you know, the cocktail party the first night, you know right away which companies have CEOs that are culture focused and people focused and which ones are not. And it tends to really stratify the group, and the success, it's anecdotal, but the success lies mostly with the companies that really focus on that. And you could never ever convince me to do it any other way. I could never run a company that didn't have almost a fanatical people focus. You know, I've seen countless examples of the results and how it works, and I would have a hard time being swayed off of that philosophy now. And there was a stretch of time our culture was not very good. You know, the first 10 years in business, we were playing make believe business, and we were trying to have a good culture, but we weren't serious about it. And until we got serious about it, our results were not. They were good. Obviously, we had growth and everything else, but it wasn't a fun place to be at times. And now it's a fun place to be every single day.
I was talking with a future radio show guest for one of the other shows that I host today, and we were talking about how companies can be well run, efficient, you know, productive, etc., and they can be healthy, and you can have a well from a metrics perspective very well, but it may not be a healthy place to work.
Yep. Totally agree. And I think, not to be too philosophical, but I think this is endemic, especially in the U.S., where a lot of companies have a really short window of attention span that they focus on. You know, you're looking at quarterly results, you're looking at annual results, and yeah, it's easy to pump numbers up in the short run and take a short focus and say things are great. But, you know, again, completely anecdotal, but I would say in the long run, if you get the culture wrong, ultimately, you may succeed and be successful, but you will be less successful than if you have the culture right.
Well, so. You're preaching to the choir, at least here from our conversation, and I'm sure many who are in the listening audience today, either live or in the future point on a podcast, are hopefully agreeing. People that listen to Critical Mass, the radio show, you know, we sort of build a virtual peer group in the radio show. That's how it got started. That's what I believe in. My first book was on the power of these peer groups. I know that you've been an active member in such a peer group, and I'd like to ask you, John, if you could maybe share with our audience from your business experience sort of how being exposed to other CEOs and business owners outside of your business and your industry has kind of helped you and maybe contributed to your firm's success.
Yeah. So, and again, I've very, very strong opinions in this subject as well. So I joined EO. I know that's somewhat of a competitor of yours, but I joined EO in probably 2003, 2004. It was YEO at the time. It's EO now. And I'm currently still an EO member, but I'm also in a YPO, the Philadelphia YPO chapter. And those two organizations are kind of heavily based around the whole forum experience. And I had a really good forum experience in EO. YPO, I'm about 2 years in, and based on, I'm about 30-week-a-year travel schedule. So I'm not currently engaged in a forum with YPO, but my EO forum stays in touch, and I've got some peers from there that that I really, you know, stay close with. But part of what I got from EO, I attended a program at MIT called Birthing of Giants, co-sponsored by MIT, EO, and Inc. Magazine. And Birthing of Giants was 65 CEOs from around the globe. There were about 20 of us from the States and 45 people from 20 other countries. And it's a three-year program. It's 4 days in the summer for three straight years. And that was really the first experience. That was in, I was a graduating class of 08, so that was in 2006. That was really the first experience I had in a real intense way with a lot of other CEOs. And they bring a facilitator in, they bring speakers in, and you literally spend four of the most kind of revealing and intense days imaginable to look at your business and process and what you're doing. And that was sort of the first time that the light was shined on how important it was to get the people side right, to make sure that you know, use Jim Collins' formula to make sure you understand your core values and make sure you've got the culture right. And I can tell you my professional life changed that day. The first hour, the first day I went through that program, it was almost like someone pulled the curtain back and said, hey, you know, here's what you're doing now, and here's all the stuff that's wrong with it, and, you know, here's a potential path forward. Now, it was a torturous couple of years to kind of work through all those ideas and concepts and everything else, but that program literally, and it wasn't the facilitators per se, and it wasn't the speakers, it was being with the 65 other CEOs and listening to their stories and their challenges and what they've been through, and understanding that there's a core group of concepts that pretty much all small businesses kind of face. And it's a lonely job, I think, being a CEO, because you don't want your senior team to see you look weak, and you don't want to talk about problems all the time. And so to get peers that have no sort of vested interest other than they're going to listen to you and you're going to listen to them to kind of bounce ideas off of, there is no better way to spend your time as a CEO than in that type of setting, where you can share experiences, and more importantly, you can see that, hey, you're not alone, and other guys and girls are fighting this exact same challenge, even in a totally different industry, but this exact same challenge that you have every single day. That was the most valuable thing that came out of Birthing of Giants for me. And that was 2006, 7, and 8. Our class continues to get together every year on our own, and I've made some of my closest friends from that experience. So not a traditional forum experience per se, but the value of peer-to-peer sharing at the CEO level, it changed my life entirely. I can't speak highly enough. We were probably about $1.2 million in revenue when I joined EO, and we'll do about $32 million this year. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt, without that EO, Birthing of Giants, Forum, YPO experience, we'd still be about $1.2 million to $1.5 million in revenue. There's no way we get past it.
Wow. Wow, that's a powerful that's a powerful answer. I appreciate you being
and
willing
I,
to share
and
that.
I really truly believe that because of the dominoes that have to fall for you to kind of move along the path. Like, you have to understand some of these concepts, and culture being one of them, and some other stuff. And that you just it's trial and error. It's really hard to learn on your own. You can shorten that learning cycle so much by hearing about other people's experiences. So yeah, I'm a massively big believer in the whole CEO peer-to-peer sharing.
I say to people, when you hear experience is the best teacher, I don't disagree with that, but I also believe some business lessons are best learned vicariously from the experiences of your peers. Because some of the lessons that they've learned, you don't want to have to go through the process of getting the experience to learn a lesson. It's just nice to kind of connect with the lesson and short-circuit that and not have to go through. Because sometimes the experience is very painful or damaging to the business. Or they lead you to a path that gets you to growth that you wouldn't have figured out on your own.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of it is a lot of times in talking through someone else's challenge, you're realizing as you're talking that you're solving that challenge for yourself. I can't tell you how many times I've been engaged in a pretty meaningful conversation with another CEO about something going on in their company. And as I'm speaking, I'm kind of solving a problem in my company in my head that I didn't even realize was going on.
I've lost count in our peer groups how many times the member goes, you know, I'm giving you this advice, but frankly, I got to take this back to my office too because I've got the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works. And it's one of those things too where you really want to be in a peer group where you know, people are looking to give more than they're looking to get, and then the collective group kind of benefits. I've been in a couple of forum, you know, kind of CEO type situations where someone just comes in and all they want to do is get, they don't want to give, and I would say those are situations to be avoided. But as long as everyone's on that same page, like, I don't expect anything out of this, but I want to give value to everybody else, the value just flows from that, so...
I find a lot of times it's that way where you go to a networking function too, and unfortunately many times in networking functions, really people are there to get, not to give. And so that's a big fundamental difference in my mind between a networking event and a peer group event. Not only the kind of things you talk about, but the way people show up. And I've seen, it seems to me, the people who get the most help from the peer group are those that put themselves most into helping the others, because when it's their turn to have a need for, then everybody feels really like, I've got to help her or him because they've given me so much over the time. It's only fair that I give them my best effort back.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, again, kind of to talk about peer groups and I think the whole confidentiality and trust factor, the higher the trust, and the higher the confidence that there's confidentiality, the more effective the kind of the learning is and the sharing is and everything else. So you got to work really, really hard to get the trust and confidence high as well.
Exactly. If someone would like to learn more about AppleTree Answers, how do they find you? What's your website?
It's Apple. It's very simple. It's AppleTreeAnswers.com. And our toll-free number is 888-44-APPLE, A-P-P-L-E.
Well, John, I appreciate you being a guest on Critical Mass, the radio show today, Critical Mass Coast to Coast, being prepared, having, you know, a thoughtful conversation. I really wish you continued success. Not that you need my good wishes. You've demonstrated a track record of continued success, but... keep up the good work, and thanks for being a member of the Critical Mass and Executive Forums community.
No problem at all. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for having me on.
Goodbye.
Take care.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, to the listening audience, I hope that you could learn something from the experience of our two guests today that'll help you make better decisions. I'd like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show as well. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. And if you'd like to learn more about the power of CEO peer groups, then visit www.executiveforums.com. Until the next show, this is Rick Franzi saying, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, only on OCTalkRadio.net.